An investigation into the treatment of severe alcohol dependency has found only 3% of people are taking up medical options to treat their alcoholism. Australia-wide, the economic burden of excessive alcohol use is said to be more than $30 billion. And yet research published today has revealed that treatment options like naltrexone and acamprosate are being overlooked, even though they've been shown to be effective and they're subsidised through the PBS. The lead author of the research is addiction medicine specialist Professor Paul Haber from Sydney's Royal Prince Alfred Hospital. I spoke to him earlier today.
I've been interested in medications to treat alcohol problems since I saw one of the early papers in The Lancet in 1996, and it struck me as incredible that we could use a medication to help people stop drinking. And ever since then, I wanted to be involved in the research to see if we could develop or improve medications to treat people with severe alcohol problems.
And so that's 1996. 20 years on, you're the lead author of this paper. What have you found?
So we found that despite the fact that there are two medications that are listed on the Pharmaceutical Benefits Scheme for use in Australia, only 3% of people with severe alcohol problems are being treated with these medications. And we're talking here about the 5% of Australians who have an alcohol dependency, or in simple terms, are hooked on or addicted to alcohol.
What explanations have you been able to uncover about why only 3% are taking up that medical option to treat their dependence?
The more disadvantaged and rural areas are less likely to be receiving these medications. And other research has shown that alcohol problems are more common in those parts of the country. So that's a problem. We showed also that people were more likely to be treated with these meds if they were female and if they were older. So what that says is that the vast bulk of the people with alcohol problems are in fact male and are younger when they start, and so we're kind of missing the boat.
Is there confidence in these treatments, or is there suspicion around the medications that are available?
There is more suspicion than there needs to be, and we contrasted in our discussion the use of these meds with medications for depression. And basically the number needed to treat in statistical terms before you get a successful treatment result for those two classes of medications is fairly similar. Yet we are much more likely as a community and as a profession to use an antidepressant for depression than we are to use an anti-alcohol drug for an alcohol problem.
Do you think alcohol dependence is regarded by GPs as a problem of addiction to be treated and managed by, say, a mental health expert, a psychologist, rather than through a pharmacological method?
In many cases, I agree that that's what's happening. I also think that many of the patients see it that way as well. And there's no doubt that to get this medication prescribed, the doctor and the patient have to both be on side with it.
Have you been able to do any cost-benefit analysis?
The cost is something like $150 a month for this medication. The government picks up the bulk of the tab.
It's not fully subsidised.
That's right. So you pay the $38 or the $6, depending if you're on a benefit or not. But internationally, it's been shown to be cost-effective, because even though that's a significant amount of money, no doubt, the disorder is highly disabling. Quality of life for people with alcohol dependence has been evaluated and shown to be as bad as those with major depression or with cancer. So it's a highly disabling disorder, major harms to the individual affected, and major knock-on effects to their families and the communities as a whole. So it's tremendously cost-effective for any treatment that will be successful.
Is this a pitch on behalf of the makers of these drugs?
Neither I nor any member of the team has any link to any of the companies making these products. We are talking about one of the disorders that has the lowest rate of any treatment in the whole textbook of medicine. So my colleague, Professor Marie Thiessen, has published a few years ago evidence that there's an average delay of 20 years before a person with an alcohol disorder takes up any form of treatment, and that approximately half of people with alcohol problems never receive any treatment at all. So, yes, we are trying to increase the uptake of treatment. And yes, it is possible whoever provides that treatment will earn some money from doing so. That's what happens when if you're in the healthcare sector, that you earn your living from providing healthcare. But we're talking about providing healthcare that is effective to people who need it and who aren't having it done.
So what do we do with your research?
Like some research, it tends to lead on to more research, but what we're trying to do is set up partnerships with primary care providers to essentially promote the use of medication, but also to promote non-medical treatment, because we're not just about one approach to treatment. We're about offering patients a choice, but encouraging those that have a significant problem to enter some kind of treatment process to address that problem for their own and for their family's benefit.
That's Professor Paul Haber, the head of drug health services at Sydney's Royal Prince Alfred Hospital, whose research has been published in the Sax Institute's Public Health Research and Practice Journal.